to safety by his train. The new bride and groom were already in the treasury when I left them, unless Maven's disgusting obsession with Mare won out. The boy is impossible to predict where she is involved. For all I know, he could have turned around to find her. He could be dead. I certainly hope he is dead. It would make the next steps infinitely easier. I know Mother and Father too well to worry about them. Woe to the person, silver or red, who might challenge my father in open combat. And Mother has her own contingencies in place. The attack on the wedding was not a surprise to any of us. How Samos is prepared. So long as Tali sticks to the plan. My brother has a hard time backing down from a fight, and he is impulsive. Another man impossible to predict. We're not supposed to hurt the rebels or impede their progress in any way. Father's orders. I hope my brother follows them. We'll be fine. I exhale slowly, holding on to those three words. They do little to calm my nerves. I want to be rid of this place. I want to go home. I want to see Elaine again. I want Tali to strut around the corner, safe and whole. Instead, he can barely walk. Ptolemus! I bark, forgetting every fear but one as he rounds the corner. His blood stands out sharply against black steel armor, silver spattered down his chest like paint. I can taste the iron in it, a sharp tang of metal. Without thinking, I yank on his armor, pulling him through the air with it. Before he can collapse, I brace my torso against his, keeping him on his feet. He's almost too weak to stand, let alone run. Icy cold terror trails fingers down my spine. "You're late," I whisper, earning a pained grin. Still alive enough for a sense of humor. Ren works swiftly, pulling off his plates of armor, but she's not faster than me. With another jerk of my hand, it falls from his body in a few clattering echoes. My eyes fly to his bare chest, expecting to see an ugly wound. Nothing there but a few shallow cuts, none of them serious enough to level someone like Ptolemus. "Blood loss," Ren explains. The skin healer pushes my brother to his knees, holding his left arm aloft, and he whimpers from the pain of it. I keep steady at his shoulder, crouching with him. "I don't have time to heal this." "This." I trail my gaze along his arm, over white skin, gray and black with fresh bruises. It ends in a bloody, blunt stump. His hand is gone, cut clean through the wrist. Silver blood pulses sluggishly from the severed veins, despite his meager attempts to wrap the wound.
"You have to," Ptolemus grinds out, his voice hoarse with agony.
I nod fervently. "Ren, it'll only take a few minutes." No magnetron is a stranger to a lost finger. We've been playing with knives since we could walk. We know how quickly a digit can be regrown.
"If he ever wants to use that hand again, you'll do as I say," she replies. "It's too complicated to do quickly. I have to seal the wound for now."
He makes another strangled noise, choking on the thought and the pain.
"Ren!"
I plead. She doesn't back down.
"For now!"
Her beautiful eyes, gray Skonos eyes, bore into mine with urgency. I see fear in her. And no wonder. A few minutes ago, she watched me murder four guards and free a prisoner of the crown. She is also complicit in the treason of House Samos.
"Fine."
I squeeze Tali's shoulder, imploring him to listen.
"For now. The second we're in the clear, she'll fix you."
He doesn't reply, only nodding as Ren gets to work. Tali turns his head, unable to watch the skin grow over his wrist, sealing up the veins and bones. It happens quickly. Blue-black fingers dance across his pale flesh as she knits him together. Skin growth is easy, or so I'm told. Nerves, bones, those are more complex. I do my best to distract him from the blunt end of his arm.
So who did it?
Another magnetron. Lakelander.
He forces out each word.
Saw me breaking off to leave. Sliced me before I knew what was happening.
Lakelanders. Frozen fools. All stern in their hideous blue. To think Maven traded the might of House Samos for them. I hope you repaid the favor.
He no longer has a head.
That'll do. There, Ren says, finishing up the wrist. She runs her hands along his arm and down his spine to the small of his back. I'll stimulate your marrow and kidneys, raise your blood production as much as I can. You'll still be weak, though.
That's fine, as long as I can walk.
He already sounds stronger.
Help me up, Evie.
I oblige, bracing his good arm over my shoulder. He's heavy, almost dead weight.
Ease up on the desserts, I grumble. Come on now, move with me.
Tali does what he can, forcing one foot after the other. Nowhere near fast enough for my taste.
Very well, I mutter, reaching out to his discarded armor. It flattens and reforms into a sheet of rippled steel.
Sorry, Tali. I push him down onto it, using my ability to hold up the sheet like a stretcher.
I can walk, he protests, but weakly. You need your focus.
Then focus for both of us, I shoot back.
Men are useless when injured, aren't they? Keeping him elevated takes a corner of my ability, but not all of it. I sprint as fast as I can, one hand on the sheet. It follows on an invisible tether, flanked by Ren on the other side. Metal sings on the edge of my perception. I note each piece as we press on, filing them away on instinct. Copper wiring, a garrote with which to strangle, door locks and hinges, darts or bullets, window frames, iron hilts with glass daggers. Father used to quiz me on such things until it became second nature, until I couldn't enter a room without marking its weapons. House Samos is never caught off guard. Father devised our swift getaway from Archeon, through the barracks and down the northern cliffs to boats waiting in the river. Steel boats, specifically made, fluted for speed and silence. Between Father and me, they'll cut through the water like needles through flesh. We're behind schedule, but only by a few minutes. In the chaos, it will take hours before anyone in Maven's court realizes how Samos has disappeared. I don't doubt other houses will take the same opportunity, like rats fleeing a sinking ship. Maven is not the only person with an escape plan. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if every house has one of its own. The court is a powder keg with an increasingly short fuse and a Spitfire king. You'd have to be an idiot not to expect an explosion. Father felt the wind shift the moment Maven stopped listening to him. As soon as it became clear that allying to the Kalor king would be our downfall. Without Ilara, no one could hold Maven's leash, not even my father. And then the Scarlet Guard rabble became more organized, a real threat rather than an inconvenience. They seemed to grow with each passing day, operating in Piedmont and the Lakelands, whispers of an alliance with Montfort far to the west. They're much larger than anyone anticipated, better organized and more determined than any insurrection in memory. All the while, my wretched betrothed lost his grip. On the throne, on his sanity, on anything but Mare Barrow. He tried to let her go, or so Elaine told me. Maven knew as well as any of us what a danger his obsession would become.
Kill her. Be done. Be rid of her poison, he used to mutter.
Elaine listened undetected, quiet in her corner of his private quarters. The words were only words. He could never part with her. So it was easy to push her into his path, and push him off course. The equivalent of waving a red flag in front of a bull. She was his hurricane, and every nudge pulled him deeper into the eye of the storm. I thought she was an easy tool to use. A distracted king makes for a more powerful queen. But Maven shut me out of a place that was rightfully mine. He didn't know to look for Elaine, my lovely invisible shadow. Her reports came later, under the cover of night. They were very thorough. I feel them still, whispered against my skin, with only the moon to listen. Elaine Haven is the most beautiful girl I've ever seen in any capacity, but she looks best in moonlight. After Queen's trial, I promised her a consort's crown, but that dream disappeared with Prince Tiberius, as most dreams do with a harsh break of day. Whore. That's what Maven called her after the attempt on his life. I almost killed him where he stood. I shake my head, refocusing on the task at hand. Elaine can wait. Elaine is waiting, just as my parents promised. Safe in our home, tucked away in the rift. The back courtyards of Archaon open onto flourishing gardens, which in turn are bounded by the palace walls. A few wrought iron fences ward the flowers and shrubbery. Good for spears. The wall and garden patrols used to be guards of many different houses. Lara's windweavers, Silks of Ural, vigilant, eagry eyes. But things have changed in recent months. Laris and Ural stand in opposition to Maven's rule, alongside House Haven. And with the battle raging, the king himself in danger, the other palace guards are scattered. I look up through the greenery, magnolia and cherry blossoms bright against the dark sky. Figures in black prowl the diamond-glass ramparts. Only House Samos remains to man the wall. "Cousins of Iron!" They snap toward my voice, responding in kind. "Cousins of Steel!" Sweat trickles down my neck as the wall looms closer. From fear, from exertion, only a few more yards. In preparation, I thicken the pearly metal of my boots, hardening my last steps. "Can you get yourself up?" I ask Ptolemus, reaching for Ren as I speak. With a groan, he swings off the stretcher, forcing himself onto unsteady feet. "I'm not a child, Eve. I can cover 30 feet. To prove his point, the black steel reforms to his body in sleek scales. If we had more time, I would point out the weaknesses in his usually perfect armor. Holes at the sides, thinning across the back. Instead, I only nod. "You first." He lifts a corner of his mouth, trying to smirk, trying to lessen my concern. I exhale in relief as he rises into the air, rocketing up to the ramparts of the wall. Our cousins above catch him deftly, drawing him in with their own ability. "Our turn." Ring clings to my side, safe beneath my arm. I haul in a breath, holding on to the feel of the rhodium metal curving beneath my toes, up my legs, over my shoulders. "Rise," I tell my armor. Pop! The first sensation my father made me memorize was a bullet. I slept with one around my neck for 2 years, until it became as familiar to me as my colors. I can name rounds from 100 yards, know their weight, their shape, their composition. Such a small piece of metal is the difference between another person's life and my death. It could be my killer, or my savior. Pop, pop, pop! The bullets exploding in their chambers feel like needles, sharp, impossible to ignore. They're coming from behind. My toes hit the ground again as my focus narrows, my hands flying up to shield against the sudden onslaught. Armor-piercing rounds, fat copper jackets with brutal tungsten cores and tapered tips, arc before my eyes, flying backward to land harmlessly in the grass. Another volley comes from at least a dozen guns, and I throw out an arm, protecting myself. The thunder of automatic gunfire drowns out Tali shouting above me. Each bullet ripples against my ability, taking another piece of it, of me. Some halt midair. Some crumple. I throw everything I can to create a cocoon of safety. From the wall, Tali and my cousins do the same. They lift the weight enough to actually let me figure out who is shooting at me. Red rags, hard eyes, scarlet guard. I grit my teeth. The bullets in the grass would be easy to toss back into their skulls. Instead, I rip apart the tungsten like wool, spinning it into glinting thread as fast as I can. Tungsten is incredibly heavy and strong. It takes more energy to work. Another bead of sweat rolls along my spine. The threads splay out in a web, hitting the 12 rebels head-on. In the same motion, I wrench the guns from their hands, shredding them to pieces. Ren clings to me, holding tightly, and I feel myself pulled back and up, sliding along perfect diamond glass. Tali catches me, as he always does.
"And down again," he mutters. His grip on my arm is crushing.
Ren gulps, leaning to look. Her eyes widen.
"Bit farther this time."
"I know. It's 100 feet down sheer cliff, and then another 200 over sloping rock to twist around to the river's edge."
"In the shadow of the bridge," Father said.
In the garden, the rebels struggle, straining against my net. I feel them push and pull it as the metal itself strains to break apart. It eats at my focus.
"Tungsten," I curse to myself. "I need more practice."
"Let's go," I tell them all. Behind me, the tungsten cracks apart into dust. A strong, heavy thing, but brittle. Without a magnetron's hand, it breaks before it bends. House Samos is done with both.
We will not break, and we will no longer bend.
The boats cut soundlessly through the water, gliding across the surface. We make good time. Our only obstacle is the pollution of Greytown. The stink of it clings to my hair, still foul in my body even as we break through the second ring of barrier trees. Ren senses my discomfort and puts a hand on my bare wrist. Her healing touch clears my lungs and chases away my exhaustion. Pushing steel through water becomes tiring after a while. Mother leans over the sleek side of my boat, trailing one hand in the flowing capital. A few catfish rise to her touch, their whiskers twining with her fingers. The slimy beasts don't bother her, but I shudder with disgust. She isn't concerned by whatever they tell her, meaning they can't sense anyone pursuing us. Her falcon overhead keeps watch as well. When the sun sets, Mother will replace him with bats. As expected, not a scratch on her or Father. He stands at the prow of the lead boat, setting our path, a black silhouette against the blue river and green hills. His presence calms me more than the peaceful valley. No one speaks for many miles, not even the cousins, who I can usually count on for nonsense chatter. Instead, they focus on discarding their security uniforms. Emblems of Norda float in our wake, while the jewel-bright medals and badges sink into darkness. Hard-earned with Samos blood, marks of our allegiance and loyalty, now lost to the depths of the river and the past. We are not Nortons anymore.
"So it's decided," I murmur.
Behind me, Tali straightens up. His ruined arm is still bandaged. Ren won't risk regrowing an entire hand on the river.
"Was there ever any doubt?"
"Was there ever a choice?"
Mother turns to look over her shoulder. She moves with the lean grace of a cat, stretching out in her bright green gown. The butterflies are long gone.
"A weak king we could control, but there is no handling madness. As soon as Iral decided to oppose him outright, our play was decided for us. And choosing the Lakelander," she rolls her eyes, "Maven cut the last bonds between our houses himself."
I almost scoff in her face. No one decides anything from my father.
but laughing at Mother is not a mistake I'm stupid enough to make. Will the other houses back us, then? I know Father was negotiating, leaving his children alone at the mercy of Maven's increasingly volatile court. More words I would never dare say aloud to either of my parents. Mother senses them anyway.
"You did well, Eve," she croons, putting a hand to my hair. She runs a few silver strands through her wet fingers. "And you, Ptolemus, between that mess in Corvium and the House Rebellions, no one doubted your allegiance. You bought us time, valuable time." I keep my focus on steel and water, ignoring her cold touch. I hope it was worth it. Before today, Maven faced multiple rebellions. Without House Samos, our resources, our lands, our soldiers, how could he stand to win? But before today, he didn't have the Lakelands. Now I have no idea what might unfold. I don't like the feeling at all. My life has been a study in planning and patience. An uncertain future frightens me. In the west, the sun sinks red against the hills, red as Elaine's hair. "She's waiting," I tell myself again. "She's safe." Her sister was not so fortunate. Mariella died poorly, hollowed out by the seething Miranda's whisper. I avoided him as much as I could, glad I knew nothing of Father's plans. I saw the depths of his punishment in Mare. After the interrogation, she flinched from him like a kicked dog. It was my fault. I forced Maven's hand. Without my interference, he might have never let the whisper have his way. But then he would have stayed away from Mare altogether. He would not have been so blinded by her. Instead, he did as I hoped, and drew her closer. I expected them to drown each other. How easy. Sink two enemies with one anchor. But she refused to break. The girl I remember, the masquerading, terrified servant who believed every lie, would have submitted to Maven months ago. Instead, she donned a different mask, danced on his strings, sat by his side, lived a half-life without freedom or ability, and still held on to her pride, her fire, her anger. It was always there, burning in her eyes. I have to respect her for that, even though she took so much from me. She was a constant reminder of what I was supposed to be. A princess. A queen. I was born 10 months after Tiberius. I was made to marry him. My first memories are of Mother's snakes hissing in my ears, breathing her whispers and promises. "You are a daughter of fangs and steel. What are you meant for, if not to rule?" Every lesson in the classroom or the arena was preparation. Be the best, the strongest, the smartest, the most deadly and the most cunning, the most worthy. And I was everything. Kings are not known for their kindness or their compassion. Queen's trial is not meant to make happy marriages, but strong children. With Cal, I had both. He would not have begrudged me my own consort or tried to control me. His eyes were soft and thoughtful. He was more than I had ever hoped for, and I had earned him with every drop of blood I'd spilled, all my sweat, all my tears of pain and frustration, every sacrifice of who my heart wanted to be. The night before Queen's trial, I dreamed what it would be like. My throne, my royal children, subject to no one, not even Father. Tiberius would be my friend, and Elaine my lover. She would marry Tali, as planned, ensuring none of us could ever be parted. Then Mare fell into our lives and blew that dream away like sand. Once, I thought the crown prince would do the unthinkable.
push me aside for the long-lost Titanos, with strange ways and an even stranger ability. Instead, she was a deadly pawn, sweeping my king from the board. The paths of fate have strange twists. I wonder if that new blood seer knew about today. Does he laugh at what he sees? I wish I'd got my hands on him just once. I hate not knowing. On the banks ahead, manicured lawns come into view. The edges of the grass tinge gold and red, giving the estates lining the river a lovely glow. Our own manor house is close, just one more mile. Then we turn west, toward our true home. Mother never answered my question. So, was Father able to convince the other houses? I ask her. She narrows her eyes, her entire body tightening, coiling up like one of her snakes. House Laris was already with us. That I knew. Along with controlling most of the Norton air fleet, the Laris Windweavers govern the Rift. In truth, they rule by our command, eager puppets willing to trade anything to maintain our iron and coal mines. Elaine, House Haven, if they aren't with us... I lick lips that are suddenly dry. A fist clenches at my side. The boat groans beneath me. And Iral has not agreed to the terms, and more than half of Haven won't either. Mother sniffs. She folds her arms across her chest, as if insulted. Don't worry. Elaine isn't one of them. Please stop crushing the boat. I don't feel like swimming the last mile. Tali nudges my arm, a slight touch. Exhaling, I realize my grip on the steel was a bit too strong. The bow smooths again, rippling back into shape. Apologies, I mutter quickly. I'm just... confused. I thought the terms were already agreed upon. The rift will rise in open defiance. Iral brings on House Larilun and all of Delphi. An entire state will secede. Mother glances past me to Father. He angles his boat toward the shore, and I follow his lead. Our familiar estate peeks through the trees, backlit by dusk. There was some debate over titles. Titles? I sneer. How stupid. What could their argument possibly be? Steel hits stone, bumping up to the low retaining wall running along the water. With a small burst of focus, I hold the metal firm against the current. Wren helps Tali out first, stepping up onto the lush carpet of grass. Mother watches, her gaze lingering on his missing hand while the cousins follow. A shadow falls over us both. Father. He stands over her shoulder. A light wind ripples his cloak, playing along the folds of void black silk and silver thread. Hidden beneath is a suit of blue-tinged chromium, so fine it could be liquid.
"I will not kneel to another greedy king," he whispers.
Father's voice is always soft as velvet, deadly as a predator.
"That's what Solon Iral said."
He reaches down, offering my mother his hand. She takes it deftly and steps from the boat. It doesn't move under her, held by my ability. Another king. "Father?" The word dies in my mouth.
"Cousins of Iron," he shouts, never breaking our stare.
Behind him, our Samos cousins drop to a knee. Ptolemus does not, looking on with as much confusion as I feel. Blood members of a house do not kneel to one another. Not like this. They respond as one, their voices ringing.
"Kings of Steel!"
Quickly, Father extends his hand, catching my wrist before my shock ripples the boat beneath. His whisper is almost too low to hear.
"To the Kingdom of the Rift."
20. Mare. The green-uniformed teleporter lands evenly on steady feet, It's been a long time since the world squeezed and blurred for me. The last time was Shade. The split-second memory of him aches. Paired with my wound and the nauseating rush of pain, it's no wonder I collapsed to my hands and knees. Spots dance before my eyes, threatening to spread and consume. I will myself to stay awake and not vomit all over, wherever I am. Before I can look much farther than the metal beneath my fingers, someone pulls me up into a crushing embrace. I cling on as hard as I can. "Cal," I whisper in his ear, lips brushing flesh. He smells like smoke and blood, heat and sweat. My head fits perfectly in the space between his neck and shoulder. He trembles in my arms, shaking. Even his breath hitches. He's thinking the same thing I am. This can't be real. Slowly, he pulls back, bringing his hands to cup my face. He searches my eyes and glares over every inch of me. I do the same, looking for the trick, the lie, the betrayal. Maybe Maven has skin changers like Nanny. Maybe this is another Miranda's hallucination. I could wake up on Maven's train, to his ice eyes and Evangeline's razor smile. The entire wedding, my escape, the battle, some horrific joke. But Cal feels real. He's paler than I remember, with blunt, close-cut hair. It would curl like Maven's if given the chance. Rough stubble lines his cheeks, along with a few minor nicks and cuts along the sharp edges of his jaw. He is leaner than I remember, his muscles harder beneath my hands. Only his eyes remain the same. Bronze, red gold, like iron brought to blazing heat. I look different, too. A skeleton. An echo. He runs a limp lock of hair through his fingers, watching the brown fade to brittle gray. And then he touches the scars, at my neck, my spine, ending with the brand below my ruined dress. His fingers are gentle, shockingly so after we almost ripped each other apart. I am glass to him, a fragile thing that might shatter or disappear at any moment. "It's me," I tell him, whispering words we both need to hear. "I'm back. I'm back. Is it you, Cal?" I sound like a child. He nods, his gaze never wavering. "It's me." I move because he won't, taking us both by surprise. My lips mold to his with ferocity, and I pull him in. His heat falls like a blanket around my shoulders. I fight to keep my sparks from doing the same. Still, the hairs on his neck rise, responding to the electric current jumping in the air. Neither of us closes our eyes. This might still be a dream. He comes to his senses first, scooping me off my feet. A dozen faces pretend to look away in some semblance of propriety. I don't care. Let them look. No flush of shame rises. I've been forced to do far worse in front of a crowd. We're on an air jet. The long fuselage, dull roar of engines, and clouds slipping past make it unmistakable, not to mention the delicious purr of electricity pulsing through wires spanning every inch. I reach out, laying my palm flat against the cool, curved metal of the jet wall. It would be easy to drink the rhythmic pulse, pull it into me. Easy and stupid. As much as I want to gorge myself on the sensation, that would end very poorly. Cal never removes his hand from the small of my back. He turns to look over his shoulder, addressing one of the dozen people harnessed in their seats. "Healer Reese, her first," he says. "Sure thing." My grin disappears the second an unfamiliar man puts his hands on me. His fingers close around my wrist. The grip feels wrong, heavy, like stone. Manacles. Without thought, I smack him away and jump back, as if burned. Terror mauls my insides as sparks spit from my fingers. Faces flash, clouding my vision. Maven, Samson, the Arvin guards with their bruising hands and hard eyes. Overhead, the lights flicker. The red-haired healer flinches back, yelping as Cal smoothly angles between us.
Mare, he's going to treat your wounds. He's a new blood, with us.
He braces one hand against the wall by my face, shielding me, boxing me in. Suddenly, the decent-sized jet is too small, the air stale and suffocating. The weight of manacles is gone, but not forgotten. I still feel them at my wrists and ankles. The lights flicker again. I swallow hard, squeezing my eyes shut, trying to focus, control. But my heartbeat rages on, my pulse a thunder. I suck down air through gritted teeth, willing myself to calm down.
You're safe. You're with Cal, the guard. You're safe.
Cal takes my face again, pleading.
Open your eyes. Look at me.
No one else makes a sound.
Mare, no one is going to hurt you here. It's all over. Look at me.
I hear the desperation in him. He knows as well as I do what could happen to the jet if I lose control entirely. The jet shifts beneath my feet, angling down in a steady decline, getting us close to the ground should the worst happen. Setting my jaw, I force my eyes open.
Look at me.
Maven said those words once, in Harbor Bay, when the sounder threatened to tear me apart. I hear him in Cal's voice, see him in Cal's face. No, I escaped you. I got away. But Maven is everywhere.
Cal sighs, exasperated and pained.
Cameron. The name rips my eyes open, and I slam both fists into Cal's chest. He stumbles back, surprised by the force. A silver flush colors his cheeks. He knits his brows in confusion. Behind him, Cameron keeps one hand on her seat, steadily swaying with the motion of the jet. She looks strong, zipped into thick weave tactical gear, with her fresh braids tightly wound to her head. Her deep brown eyes bore into mine.
Not that. Begging comes too easily.
Anything but that, please. I can't feel that again.
The smother of silence. The slow death.
I spent 6 months beneath that weight, and now, feeling myself again, I may not survive another moment with it. A gasp of freedom between two prisons is just another torture.
Cameron keeps her hands at her sides. Long, dark fingers, still, waiting to strike.
The months have changed her, too. Her fire has not disappeared, but it has direction, focus, purpose.
Fine, she replies.
With deliberate motions, she crosses her arms over her chest, folding away her lethal hands. I almost collapse in relief.
It's good to see you, Mare.
My heartbeat still thrums. Enough to make me breathless, but the lights stop flickering. I dip my head in relief.
Thank you.
At my side, Cal looks on grimly. A muscle ripples in his cheek. What he's thinking, I can't say, but I can guess. I spent 6 months with monsters, and I haven't forgotten what it feels like to be a monster myself. Slowly, I sink into an empty seat, putting my palms on my knees. Then I lace my fingers together. Then sit on my hands. I don't know which looks the least threatening. Furious with myself, I glare at the metal between my toes. Suddenly, I'm very aware of my army jacket and battered dress, ripped at almost every seam, and how cold it is in here. The healer notes my shiver and quickly drapes a blanket around my shoulders. He moves steadily, all business. When he catches my eye, he gives me a half-smile.
Happens all the time, he mutters.
I force a chuckle, a hollow sound.
Let's see that side, okay?
As I twist to show him the shallow but long gash along my ribs, Cal takes the seat next to me. He offers a smile of his own.
Sorry, he mouths to me.
Sorry, I mouth back. Even though I have nothing to be truly sorry for once. I've come through horrendous things, done horrendous things to survive. It's easier this way. For now. I don't know why I pretend to sleep.
As the healer does his work, my eyes slip closed, and they stay that way for hours. I've dreamed of this moment for so long it's almost overwhelming. The only thing I can do is lean back and breathe easy. I feel like a bomb. No sudden moves. Cal stays close to my side, his leg pressed up against mine. I hear him shift occasionally, but he doesn't speak with the others. Neither does Cameron. Their attention is reserved for me. Part of me wants to talk, ask them about my family. Killorn, Farley, what happened before, what's happening now, where the hell we're even going. I can't get past thinking the words. There's only enough energy in me to feel relief. Cool, soothing relief. Cal is alive. Cameron is alive. I'm alive. The others mutter among themselves, their voices low out of respect, or they just don't want to wake me up and risk another brush with fickle lightning. Eavesdropping is second nature at this point. I catch a few words, enough to paint a hazy picture. Scarlet Guard, tactical success, Montfort. The last takes me a long moment of contemplation. I barely remember the New Blood twins, envoys of another nation far away. Their faces blur in my memory. But I certainly remember their offer. Safe haven for New Bloods, provided I accompany them. It unsettled me then, and unsettles me now. If they've made an alliance with the Scarlet Guard, what was the price? My body tenses at the implication. Montfort wants me for something. That much is clear, and Montfort seems to have aided my rescue. In my head, I brush against the electricity of the jet, letting it call to the electricity inside me. Something tells me this battle isn't over yet. The jet lands smoothly, touching down after sunset. I jump at the sensation, and Cal reacts with cat-like reflexes, his hand coming down on my wrist. I flinch away again with a spike of adrenaline. "Sorry," he sputters. Despite my churning stomach, I force myself to calm down. I take his wrist in my hand, fingers brushing along the steel of his flamemaker bracelet. He kept me chained up, silent stone manacles, night and day, I whisper. I tighten my grip, letting him feel a bit of what I remember. I still can't get them out of my head. His brow furrows over darkening eyes. I know pain intimately, but I can't find the strength to see it in Cal. I drop my gaze, running a thumb along his hot skin, another reminder that he is here and I am here. No matter what happens, there is always this. He shifts, moving with his lethal grace, until I'm holding his hand. Our fingers lace and tighten. "I wish I could make you forget," he says. "That won't help anything." "I know. But still." Cameron watches from across the aisle, one tapping leg crossed over the other. She looks almost amused when I glance at her. "Amazing," she says. I try not to bristle. My relationship with Cameron, though short, was not exactly smooth. In hindsight, my fault. Another in a long line of mistakes I desperately want to fix. "What?" Grinning, she unstraps from her seat and stands as the jet slows. "You still haven't asked where we're going." "Anywhere's better than where I was." I throw a pointed glance at Cal and pull my hand away to fool with the buckles of my harness. And I figured someone would fill me in. He shrugs as he gets up, waiting for the right time. "Didn't want to overload you." For the first time in a long time, I truly laugh. That is an absolutely horrific pun. His wide smile matches mine. "Does the job." "This is bleeding unbearable," Cameron mutters to herself. Once I'm free from my seat, I approach her, tentative. She notes my apprehension and shoves her hands in her pockets. It's not like Cameron to back down or soften, but she does for me. I didn't see her in the battle, and I'd be stupid not to realize her true purpose. She's on this jet to keep an eye on me. A bucket of water next to a campfire, should it rage out of control. Slowly, I put my arms around her shoulders, hugging her close. I tell myself not to flinch at the feel of her skin. She can control it, I tell myself. She won't let her silence touch you. Thanks for being here, I tell her. I mean it. She nods tightly, her chin brushing the top of my head. So damn tall. Either she's still growing or I've started shrinking. Even money on both. Now tell me where here is, I add, pulling back, and what the hell I've been missing. She ducks her chin, gesturing toward the tail of the plane. Like the old Black Run, this air jet features a ramp entrance. It lowers with a pneumatic hiss. Healer Reese leads the others out, and we follow, a few paces behind. I tense as we go, not knowing what to expect outside. We're a lucky bunch, Cameron says. We get to see what Piedmont looks like. Piedmont? I glance at Cal, unable to hide my shock or confusion. He rolls his shoulders. Discomfort flashes across his face. I wasn't aware until this was planned. They didn't tell us much. They never do. That's how the guard works. How it keeps ahead of silvers like Samson or Ilara. People know exactly what they need to and nothing more. It takes a lot of faith, or stupidity, to follow orders like that. I walk down the ramp, each step lighter than the last. Without the dead weight of manacles, I feel like I could fly. The other guardsmen keep on ahead of us and join in with a crowd of other soldiers. The Piedmont branch of the Scarlet Guard, right? Big branch by the looks of it. What do you mean? Cal mutters in my ear. Over his shoulder, Cameron eyes us both, equally puzzled. I glance between them, searching for the right thing to say. I choose the truth. That's why we're in Piedmont. The guard has been operating here, as in Norda and the Lakelands. The words of the Piedmont princes, Darius and Alexandrit, echo in my mind. Cal holds my gaze for a moment, before turning to look at Cameron. You're close to Farley. You hear anything about this? Cameron taps her lip. She never mentioned it. I doubt she knows, or has clearance to tell me. Their tones change, sharper, all business. They don't like each other. On Cameron's end, I understand. On Cal's, he was raised a prince. Even the Scarlet Guard can't scrub away every inch of brat. Is my family here? I sharpen too. Do you know that, at least? Of course, Cal replies. He's not a good liar, and I see no lie in him now. I was assured of it. They came from trial with the rest of the Colonel's team. Good. I'm going to see them as soon as possible. The Piedmont air is hot, heavy, sticky, like the deepest hole of summer, even though it's only spring. I've never started sweating so quickly. Even the breeze is warm, offering no respite as it rolls across the flat, hot concrete. The landing field is awash with floodlights, so bright it almost crowds out the stars. In the distance, more jets line up. Some are forest green, same as the ones I saw in Caesar Square. Air jets like the Black Run, as well as bigger cargo craft. Montfort, I realize as the dots connect in my brain. The white triangle on their wings is their mark. I saw it before, back at Tuck, on crates of equipment, and on the twins' uniforms. Peppered in with the Montfort crafts are deep blue jets, as well as yellow and white ones, their wings painted in stripes. The first are Lakelander, the second from Piedmont itself. Everything around us is well organized, and judging by hangars and outbuildings, well funded. Clearly, we're on a military base, and not the kind the Scarlet Guard is used to. Both Cal and Cameron look just as surprised as I do. I just spent 6 months a prisoner, and you're telling me I know more about our operations than the both of you? I scoff at them. Cal looks sheepish. He's a general. He's silver. He was born a prince. Being confused and helpless deeply unsettles him. Cameron just bristles. Took you just a few hours to regain your self-righteousness. Must be a new record. She's right, and it stings. I hurry to catch her, Cal at my side. Sorry. I thought this would be easier. A hand at the small of my back bleeds warmth, soothing my muscles. What do you know that we don't? Cal asks, his voice achingly gentle. Part of me wants to shake him out of it. I'm not a doll, not Maven's doll, no one's. And I'm in control again. I don't need to be handled. But the rest relishes his tender treatment. It's better than anything I've experienced in so long. I don't break my stride, but I keep my voice low. On the day Halsey Rahl and the others tried to kill Maven, he was holding a feast for two princes from Piedmont, Darius and Alexandrite. They questioned me beforehand, asking about the Scarlet Guard, their operations in their kingdom, something about a prince and princess. The memory sharpens into focus. Charlotta and Michael. They're missing. A dark cloud crosses Cal's face. We heard the princes were in Archeon. Alexandrite died afterward in the assassination attempt. I blink, surprised. We kept tabs on you as best we could, he explains. It was in the reports. Reports? The word spirals. Is that why Nanny was embedded in court? To keep an eye on me? Nanny was my fault. Cal spits out. He glares at his feet. No one else's. Next to him, Cameron scowls. Damn right. Miss Barrow! The voice isn't a shock. Where the Scarlet Guard goes, so does Colonel Farley. He looks almost the same as always. Careworn, gruff, and brutish. Close-cropped white blonde hair, his face lined with premature stress, and one eye clouded with a permanent film of scarlet blood. The only changes are the steady graying of his hair, as well as a sunburn across his nose and more freckles on his exposed forearms. The Lakelander isn't used to Piedmont sunshine, and he's been here long enough to feel it. Lakelander soldiers of his own, their uniforms a split of red and blue, accompany him in flanking position. Two others in green trail along as well. I recognize Rash and Tahir at a distance, walking an even step. Farley isn't with them, and I don't see her on the concrete, leaving one of the air jets. It isn't like her to turn from a fight, unless she never made it out of Norta. I swallow the sobering thought and focus on her father. Colonel, I dip my head in greeting. He surprises me when he puts out one incredibly calloused hand. Good to see you whole, he says. Whole as can be expected. That unsettles him. He coughs, looking between the three of us, a precarious place to be for a man who openly fears what we are. I'm going to see my family now, Colonel. There's no reason to ask permission. I move to sidestep him, but his hand stops me cold. This time I fight the gut urge to flinch away. No one else is going to see my fear, not right now. Instead, I level my eyes on his and let him realize exactly what he's doing. This isn't my decision, the colonel says firmly. He raises his eyebrows, imploring me to listen. Then he tips his head to the side. Over his shoulder, Rash and Tahir nod at me. Miss Barrow, we've been instructed to escort you to your debriefing. The twins blink at me in unison, finishing their maddening tandem speech. Like the colonel, they sweat in the humidity. It makes their matching black beards and ochre skin gleam. Instead of punching them both, as I wish I could, I take a small step back. Debriefing. The thought of explaining all I've been through to some guard strategist makes me want to scream or storm or both. Cal cuts between us, if only to cushion whatever blow I might send their way. You're really going to make her do this now? His tone of disbelief is undercut with warning. It can wait. The colonel exhales slowly, the picture of exasperation. It may seem heartless. He throws a cutting glare at the Montfort twins. But you have vital information on our enemies. These are our orders, Barrow. His voice softens. I wish they weren't. With a light touch, I push Cal to the side. I'm going to see my family now, I shout, speaking back and forth between the insufferable twins. They just scowl. How rude, Rash mutters. Quite rude, Tahir mutters back. Cameron conceals a low laugh as a cough. Don't tempt her, she warns. I'll look the other way if lightning strikes. The orders can wait, Cal adds, using all of his military training to seem commanding, even if he has little authority here. The Scarlet Guard sees him as a weapon, nothing more. I know because I used to see him the same way. The twins don't budge. Rash blusters, drawing himself up like a bird fluffing its feathers. Certainly you have as much motive as anyone to aid in King Maven's downfall. Certainly you know the best ways to defeat him. Tahir carries on. They're not wrong. I've seen Maven's deepest wounds and darkest parts. Where to hit him and make him bleed most. But in this moment, with everyone I love so close, I can barely see straight. Right now, if someone chained Maven to the ground in front of me, I wouldn't stop to kick him in the teeth. I don't care who's holding your leash, any of you. I step neatly around them both. Tell your master to wait. The brothers trade glances. They speak in each other's thoughts, debating. I would walk away if I knew where to go, but I'm hopelessly adrift. My mind already races ahead. To Mom, Dad, Gisa, Traymi, and Bree. I picture them holed up in another barracks, squeezed into a dormitory room, smaller than our stilt house. Mom's bad cooking stinking up the space, Dad's chair, Gisa's scraps. It makes my heart ache. I'll find them myself, I hiss, intending to leave the twins behind for good. Instead, Rash and Tahir bow back, waving me on. Very well, your debriefing is in the morning, Miss Barrow. Colonel, if you would escort her to— Yes, the colonel says sharply, cutting them both off. I'm grateful for his hastiness. Follow me, ma'am. The Piedmont base is much larger than Tuck, judging by the size of the landing field. In the dark, it's hard to tell, but it reminds me more of Fort Patriot, the Norton military headquarters in Harbor Bay. The hangars are larger, the aircraft numbering in the dozens. Instead of walking to wherever we're going, the colonel's men drive us in an open-topped transport. Like some of the jets, its sides are striped, yellow and white. Tuck, I could understand. An abandoned base, out of sight, out of mind, was probably easy for the Scarlet Guard to take. But this is none of those things. Where's Killorn? I mumble under my breath, nudging Cal beside me. With your family, I assume. He bounced between them and the New Bloods most of the time. Because he has no family of his own. I drop my voice lower, to save the colonel any offense. And Farley? Cameron leans around Cal, her eyes oddly kind. She's in the hospital, but don't worry. She didn't go to Archeon. She isn't injured. You'll see her soon. She blinks rapidly, selecting her words with care. You two will have... things to talk about. Good. The warm air tugs at me with sticky fingers, tangling my hair. I can barely sit still in my seat, too excited and nervous. When I was taken, Shade had just died. Because of me. I wouldn't blame anyone, including Farley, if they hated me for it. Time doesn't always heal wounds. Once in a while, it makes them worse. Cal keeps a hand on my leg, a firm weight as a reminder of his presence. Next to me, his eyes whip back and forth, noting every turn of the transport. I should do the same. The Piedmont base is unfamiliar ground, but I can't bring myself to do much more than chew my lip in hope. My nerves buzz, but not from electricity. When we make a right, turning into a network of cheery brick row houses, I feel like I might explode. Officers' quarters, Cal mutters under his breath. This is a royal base, government-funded. There's only a few Piedmont bases of this size. His tone tells me he wonders as I do. Then how are we here? We slow in front of the only house with every window ablaze. Without thought, I vault over the side of the transport, almost tripping over the rags of my dress. My vision narrows to the path in front of me. Gravel walk, flagstone steps, the ripples of movement behind curtained windows. I hear only my heartbeat and the creak of an opening door. Mom reaches me first, outstripping both my long-limbed brothers. The collision almost knocks the air